Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
During the summer when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends or alone on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected so you can enjoy all the summertime vibes, whether you're sharing pics from a rooftop, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show episode after episode. So stay connected to your favorite people and your favorite things with AT&T 5G and home internet. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
Do you remember grammar? Set of rules we learned as kids, often reluctantly and with great annoyance, about how to use language. I've been thinking a lot about grammar and how it can reveal power and the abuse of it in a system. In fact, I built a whole TED Talk on deconstructing racism based on deconstructing sentences. Thank you, English teachers of the world. I collected many headlines for that talk, headlines that chronicled white people calling the police on black people, and I saw a devastating pattern of abuse of power. White woman calls cops on black man inspecting his own property can easily turn into police shoot unarmed black man on suspicion of trespassing. In my case, the structure I saw was as follows. A subject, white person, takes an action, calls police against the target, black person, for engaging in some activity, inspecting property. It was then fun for me to imagine what would happen if we reordered that sentence. Have the black man call the cops on the white woman, or change his activity to something absurdly innocent, say bird watching. Or what if, and this is a big if, she changed her action and didn't call the damn cops? What if she simply waved at the man? And that's it. That's the TED Talk. I saved you like 16 minutes and 50 seconds of your life having to watch the video. Point is, I've been using language professionally for decades as a writer, as a speaker, as a performer, and yet, like all of us, I have things to learn. Fortunately, I found a great teacher, and I'm going to share him and his lessons with you. Let me tell you about how I came to know a man named Yadon Israel. It was a long time ago in a place far, far away, June, the year 2020, to be precise, but it feels like a long time ago and far, far away. And I was exhausted and near broken. I was grieving George Floyd. I was grieving the United States of America. I was grieving myself. And I was doing a lot of talking and answering questions about race. And all my Zoom sessions blurred into one until I was invited to participate in something different. Khadija Hosseini is a self-described cultural engineer and creative strategist. And she invited me to a special online salon that she called Home. Or is it Om? It's spelled the French way. It was H-O-M-M-E. So I'm like, oh, Om, because like meditation. But it was like home because we're coming home. Either way, it's this combination of art and wellness and cultural conversation space. And I wasn't really sure what I was signing up for, but I knew she was cool, creative, black lady who would not steer me wrong. And the invite promised that someone named Yadon Israel, who I had heard of and briefly met before but couldn't place him, will be the moderator of the meditation and conversation on analyzing the structure of headlines to reframe slash revert the gaze away from the victims as racial objects back to the racial subjects perpetuating the problem. I mean, who wouldn't go to that? That's an instant click. In that salon, we were joined by writer, organizer, and educator Mahogany Brown. and it was a great gathering. But I'm not here just to flex on how dope my Zooms are, and they're very dope. I'm here to share a lesson that I'll never forget. I'll sum it up very simply. George Floyd wasn't killed by Derek Chauvin. Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd. How we say things changes what we're saying, and Yadan opened my eyes to the ways in which our media outlets, and we ourselves, can abuse language, and particularly the passive voice, and in so doing, we remove accountability for devastating actions. Yadan would know. He is a master linguist, wordsmith, and he's got mad credits. He's an educator, he's an entrepreneur, he's a writer, an editor, the founder of Literary Swag, this cultural movement intersecting literature and fashion to make books cool. He teaches creative writing at both the New School and City College in New York. He's the former editor-in-chief of Brooklyn Magazine. Like I said, the man knows words. So we sat down in Zoom to talk about the power of language and the risk of misusing it, especially on the subject of racism, violence, and systems of oppression.
It starts with our taking for granted that our words matter. George Orwell has this quote that language corrupts thought and thought corrupts language. So it's like a tautological circle. And for people who don't know what tautological means, it's basically a circular logic. So it's like, I think before I am before I think. But the sort of analogy he uses, like, I drink because I'm a failure because I drink. And when you find yourself in that sort of what I call a linguistic poverty, where you do not have language to disrupt the way your brain processes information, even when you're introduced to new information, you run it through the same filter that you already think through.
Right.
And so the language barrier lecture started because I spend a lot of time reading through common threads on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And what I particularly like to do is study a conversation between parties or between people and look at where the understanding or the communication breaks down, when the barrier appears, right? And it's interesting how people who have access to the same words do not have access a lot of times to the same language. And by what I mean by that is that a lot of people, and this is all of us, have our own lived experience with words, but we do not have the definition of the word we're using. So for example, a word like racism, it's a loaded word, not only because there is so many quote unquote definitions, but because when that word is thrown out, there is a reaction that's wholly private that plays itself out in public. Meaning, if I say someone's racist, right, a person is not necessarily hearing what my definition is when I call them racist. They're responding to their idea of what I mean by the word. So in that moment, we have the same words, but we have different languages.
Right.
And so what I've learned and what reason why I created these language barrier lectures was because I saw this as a teacher, that most times when you're in a classroom and you ask the definition of a word, most people give you an example of the word, not the definition. So basic example, I'll ask like, what is red? And they'll say an apple. And I'm like, no, an apple is an example of red. What is red? They'll think, and then eventually somebody arrive at, oh, it's a color, right? And so when you think about definitions, you're thinking about what do words mean? All that tends to point to is the fact that many of us do not have a basic definition for a word, a basic meaning. And so a lot of my classes and what these language lectures were structured around was, let's develop a common language and a common understanding of meaning before we even talk about anything. We have to first establish a foundational language structure that we're using.
Can we make that your class, like a prerequisite for entering into my mentions? Is that possible?
Yeah. I think that's a great way to engage with people is before we, anytime we engage, is to first establish, wait, what do you mean when you say X? Mm. And this is something I learned when I was, you know, a lot of my time I spent as a professional, used to argue with white people on social.
As a professional.
And as a professional. Like I would wake up at 9, I would clock in at 9, take a break at 12, clock back in at 1:30 and go to day. And what a lot of those arguments were about was me trying to use language as a weapon, right? And what I mean by weaponizing language was I had access to definitions that I wasn't making available to the person I was talking to. And I also knew or assumed that this person had the same access that I'd had to the language that they had. So I thought it was a sincere argument. And so when I'm, you know, in an argument, busting someone's ass, I don't know if I can curse on here, with language, and I'm like, you know, pulling references and someone's like, they can't even follow the argument. So they're like, well, that's why you know, black people ain't shit anyway. When they would just pivot, I would follow their pivots, not recognizing in that moment, like, this person doesn't even know what I just said. The language that I have is operating at a level that's like not above, right? It's like, mm-hmm. they just don't have access to those definitions. But I saw it with black people, and I just saw it a lot of times. I'm just assuming we know the same things. And so one of the frameworks I introduce when I talk to anybody, right, is like, when someone says, oh, that's racist, even with black people, even with someone I've known for a long time, is I go, wait, what do you mean when you say racist? Mm. And what I do more in conversation is I inquire more about someone's definitions to understand the framework they're coming from before I engage. Whereas before, I was engaging first and only and expending a lot of language and wasting a lot of time talking to someone I thought I understood me. So a way to think about this is, if somebody was speaking French is not a language I speak, I don't try to argue with that person because I already know we don't understand each other. But what's the assumption of English, and this is to your main question, what do you see a lot is that because we have access to the same words, we feel like we have access to the same language. So it's like, oh, this person understands me. Hmm. And that is not what's happening 95% of the time we talk to anybody. Even someone you grew up with, you assume you know everything. Like, oh, we come from the same world, but we all have different relationships to the world. We have different thoughts about this world. So that means our language is charged very differently. And so the way we don't take each other for granted and the way we honor each other, the way we see each other in this world, is before we engage with somebody, is we first ask, or I first ask, what world are you coming from?
Right.
So I know, okay, when I'm talking to you, I have a word for that world that you speak to that actually isn't the word you would use. And it's like, how do we translate to each other our values and meanings to develop a different type of conversation or develop a conversation?
A conversation. Well, and that, I mean, it is a very empathetic, cautious, and I think even like respectful way to engage with another person, which is like, pause.
Right.
Where are you coming from?
Like, right.
I don't think this word means what you think it means, or maybe it doesn't mean what I think it means to you.
Right.
And
right.
So you can try to get on the same page.
Right.
So one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you is we did this OM series with Khadija a few
shout out to Khadija.
Weeks ago.
And Mo too.
And Mo, that's right. Poet Mo. And this idea of how the media is telling the story of this moment, mm-hmm. With a passive voice. Mm-hmm. And I'm sensitive to grammar because the sentence diagramming in my own TED talk, and then I saw what you did. And so I want you to share what you did for me, which is put me on hyper alert for statements like George Floyd was killed.
Right.
George Floyd died in police custody.
Mm-hmm.
Breonna Taylor was shot. Got shot.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what those statements maybe should sound like and where your position on that comes from?
Yeah. So just to give people a basic framework of the English language.
Professor hat. Here we go.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, people laugh, and you know what happens is what you said is interesting. Is like, a lot of us have trauma around language.
Yeah.
So having Europeans strip our language from us somewhere, so we don't even know what our original language sounds like, to the point that we have this language that doesn't belong to us. But then also, just in on a more personal level, like elementary school, having to learn subject and predicate and all those things, and just brain just going like, I don't get it, I don't need to know this, and just shutting off. And because people weaponize grammar, it becomes another site for trauma, because now you're getting like beat over the head with something you don't even know.
Mm.
You don't even know what it is, but you're getting hit with it. You know, anytime someone hears grammar, they're like, oh, shit, nah, I don't want
to
hear it.
No one likes to feel dumb.
Right. And what happens with that process when I hit you with something it's assuming what I'm saying in that motion of attacking you in a moment of vulnerability is saying, you know this already. And so a person goes, damn, why didn't I know that? As opposed to, no, there are so few people who know this, right? So to understand the basic unit of an English language sentence is to understand that the basic definition of a sentence is it's a complete thought.
During the summertime when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected, whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show, episode after episode after episode. So connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn. Alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
And what a complete thought means is that there is three parts to a sentence. Every sentence, for it to be a complete thought, it has to have a subject, which is the thing doing the action, which comes first, to the object, the verb, which is the action the subject does to the verb, which comes second, following the subject. And then third is the object, which is the thing the subject is acting on. That is the order of an English sentence. Subject, so that is a complete object. Thought. Subject, verb, object. Okay. Now, in basic grammar school, we're just taught about the subject and the predicate. What that means is, what a thought we believe or we have been taught in the common framework of language is that a sentence is what someone does. So a sentence like that would be, I walked. Now that is a thought, but it isn't complete because that thought doesn't have an object. Translation, that thought does not have an objective. So that person who walked, why are they walking? What are they walking to? You don't know because there is no object. Read, there is no objective. So even from a young age, the way we're educated is to think not in complete thoughts, but already in incomplete thoughts. Mm. We're only thinking about our actions in the world, not the objective of our actions. So you're already operating, and this is what's going to come to the passive and active voice, is when your framework, and many of us have grown up like this, it's the reason why we don't understand like how something we didn't mean to do could still happen. Because our framework is just, well, this is what I did. So you can't tell me that the object who was affected by my action is what I meant to do. So the subject verb object is that the subject does the action to the object. So the subject's action has an objective. every subject's action has an objective.
Oh, there that's is like a mantra. Every subject's right. action has an objective. Got it. Okay.
Right. So that's what makes us human beings, right? So when we talk about subjectivity, it's seen in the sentence structure. Subjects act. Subjects have agency with an objective.
Okay.
So without an objective, you do not have an action. Without an action, you don't have a subject. So when I talk about the definitions of a sentence, it's important that when talking about one part of the sentence, you understand that every part of the sentence implicates another part. Thus, it's a complete thought because all parts of your thoughts are connected to one another.
Got it.
There is no parts operating in isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So now when we come to the subject, verb, object of a sentence and active voice is about the arrangement of accountability and power. By that, I mean the subject does the action to the object. So the subject comes first, the verb that the subject doing is coming second, and then that the object that the subject is doing the verb to comes last. Grammar is about the way we arrange power in language. So if an example is men kill women in the sentence, men is the subject, kill is the verb, women are the object. In that framework, you know that men are killing women.
Right.
So the objective of men committing like this of killing someone is to do it to women. So when you interrogate that sentence, you hold the subject accountable because the subject is the one doing the thing. Now, what I always show is what a passive voice sentence looks like, which is women are killed by men. Now, what happens in that reworking of the framework, the objective of the sentence becomes the subject of the sentence. And then what happens from there is that the verb, which is supposed to be killed, isn't killed now. It becomes are. And there's something that's essential to understanding about verbs, that there are two types of verbs.
Mm-hmm.
There are plot-based verbs. And by plot-based verbs, I mean like things that operate in the physical world. So things we taste, touch, hear, see, smell.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are state of being verbs. Is, am, was, are, were.
Yeah.
Those are verbs that describe internal states of being.
Versus so what like happens? External actions as well.
Right. So what happens in passive voice is that the verbs go from something we see concretely in active voice to something that becomes an idea about perception. So an active voice is not men are killed women. It's men kill women. It's directive. It's direct. Yeah. It's like, okay, I see who's doing what to whom. When you say women are killed by men, it now shifts the role of the actor to the object, meaning that the object has no power.
Right.
So the man couldn't help but to kill a woman because she's a woman. And so in that framework, what that does, that passive construction, is it gets us to actively interrogate the subject. So we ask a woman, well, why did she get killed?
Oh, the object.
They've
been made the subject.
It's like it literally creates a cognitive dissonance in your brain where even though you know that's supposed to be the object, you still treat it like a subject.
During the summertime when the weather gets hot, I can only imagine how much time you plan to spend outside with friends and family or on your couch with that AC blasting. AT&T 5G and home internet keeps you connected whether you're at home or on the go, so you can stay connected to your loved ones and to your favorite things. Whether you're sharing pics from the best rooftops, video calling your friends from an outdoor concert, or streaming your favorite show episode after episode after episode. So connect at home or on the move with AT&T 5G and home internet and create memories and more all summer long. AT&T 5G requires compatible plan and device. Coverage not available everywhere. Learn more at att.com/5G for you.
The wait is over. The Chi is back on Paramount Plus, and the stakes have never been higher. Everything changes on the South Side when a new threat comes to power in the Showtime original series from Emmy winner Lena Waithe. Battle lines will be drawn. Alliances will shift, and danger lies around every corner, leaving everyone to wonder who they can trust. Visit ParamountPlus.com/TheShot to get a 50% discount off the Paramount Plus with Showtime annual plan. Offer ends July 14th. Subscription auto-renews. Restrictions apply.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
My mind is awakened to this, and like my radar right. is very active, and there I listen go. To read a lot of media, and everybody's guilty. Everybody's guilty. And, you know, for example, not to throw a particular outlet under the bus, but like National Public Radio, I listen to their quick little up firsty kind of podcast, and it's mad passive. And I think, and I suspect though, that part of their intention is they've been hearing hashtag say her name, hashtag say their names, remember them, honor them.
Right.
And so they're like, we're doing the right thing. We're leading with Breonna. We're leading with George. What do you want from us?
Right.
So how do you think about the say her name or say their names desire to honor the fallen?
Right.
While also holding the appropriate party responsible for a real action.
So I know like part of like controlling narratives is changing the structure, right? So if we start talking about the killer too much, then we're not talking about the victim. So we want to talk about the victim to humanize the victim. But once again, it's a function of cognitive dissonance to disrupt the language because the language is complete. If I say Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd, or if I say, and I don't even have the police, all of the three police officers who are accountable for Breonna Taylor's death on hand.
And that's part of the challenge, right? The three been allowed officers, to be anonymous.
Yeah. Right. Like the three. No, and their names are there. I just don't have them on off because it's like one name is easy to remember the three, right?
Yeah.
So I don't have the three names that killed Breonna Taylor. The fact of the matter of the language is like if I have a complete thought, I'm able to focus on two things at the same time because it's essentially one thought.
Mm-hmm.
So the language that we use in the world is an extension of the language we understand in our own brains, which is, and this is the quote by F. Scott Fitzgerald that I often say in my class and just when dealing with language, is that a first-rate intelligence, quote unquote, not saying you're smart, is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in your mind at the same time and still be able to function. Because of the frameworks in which so many of us have been educated to think on a grammatical level, which is subject-verb, not subject-verb-object, right? So subject verb agreement, right? Everything is about what someone does, not what someone does, not the objective that someone does something or the person or the object that someone does something to. We are from young already disconnected from other people's objects. Yeah. We're disconnecting from our own objectives of language. So many objectives are missing from it. So it's like you want to honor Breonna Taylor by saying her name. How does saying her name honor her? Right. And if you ask that question, and I mean this on a linguistic level, it gets received. Someone receives it as you saying that she's not important. Someone receives it as you saying she doesn't matter. Whereas the language that I'm coming at this with is it's about understanding what is the true objective of your action. So in saying Breonna Taylor's name, what is the objective? Right. What do you want to happen? Right. And so even when you say justice for Breonna Taylor, what becomes the verb? If I ask you, what's the verb in it?
Can't identify one. I mean, justice is trying to act like a verb, but it's
no, but justice is the subject, right? Because we have justice, subject, for that's operating where the verb should be. Breonna Taylor is the object, but justice is a noun. What is for?
Oh, you got me, professor. It's not a verb.
No, I mean, it's not a verb. It's not a verb, not a verb, right? So what is for, and I'm gonna type this up right now because I'm like, sometimes when I do these things off the top, I don't want to like miscommunicate.
Yeah, yeah.
Before is a preposition.
Yeah, good.
Right? So it's the thing that sets a verb up.
Right.
Right? It's the thing that like, it's the alley hoop of a verb. Right? It's like because of. So it's used as a function to indicate suitability. So we want justice for Breonna Taylor, but because even in that statement, there is no actual action, there is no true subject, and there's no true objective.
It's abstract, actually.
Yes.
You're just like, justice by who? Who's supposed to deliver it? Are you asking for justice from the state, from the mayor, from the people?
Right.
Like, because otherwise it's just this floating abstract idea of justice that no one is responsible for. And so you kind of let some unnamed actor, some unnamed subject off the hook.
And what I do with language is show you how high the stakes always are when talking, when using any language, the stakes are always high. And so to understand that anytime you open your mouth, that there is the stakes, this is life and death for any of us, whoever.
Yeah.
It changes the way you interact with the world. And an immature reaction is to not want to engage, to say, I'm just not going to talk. It's not only immature, but it's an irresponsible way because like your brain is still doing the work. So you're still thinking the thoughts. But once you start to put language out into the world and you can see what that language does, that's when you can begin to revise and interrogate, well, why did I say it that way? Is there another way I could have said it?
Right.
And so what those language barrier lectures are doing is equipping people who need this language the most with the understanding of the language that they use. And it's all someone's always using against us. And we're a lot of times the victims of language, because what that language does is that we read that language passively, we internalize it passively, but then it actively works on our brain.
Yeah,
so it's literally like every day we go on a computer and we're clicking spam accounts, like literally like spam, like we're clicking all these things. We're clicking fake news sites. We even read it. The virus is already in our computer and is working its way through our files. And then when we say some shit to somebody else, we just said that thing we read. And then it's like, where'd you read that? I can't remember. Who wrote that? I don't know. So it's like information is getting passed through these filters and none of us know who to hold accountable.
Yeah.
And so that's what the language lectures are doing, is it's challenging people to take an active role and active participation in their language.
You know, I'm thinking about the depths of this lack of accountability in language. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you put the object, the target in a sentence and put them in the driver's seat, essentially make them the subject. Make George Floyd the subject of his own murder,
right?
Or make Black people the subject of our own victimization. Black people die at. Black people are more vulnerable.
Right.
What is wrong with these Black people?
Exactly.
They can't get anything together.
Right.
They are destroying themselves dramatically. Uh-huh. And so even those who are doing the great social science work and trying to get that message out, the message is being perverted in, hold up, that was passive.
There you go.
Those who deliver information unto us, especially in the media, sometimes even us ourselves, are holding the objects responsible for their own demise, holding people responsible for their own oppression.
Even in your framing, right? It's not passive, but that verb, right? Are holding?
Yeah.
Think how different and more powerful is holding, right? Because when you say are holding, it's a state of being. It's a perception.
When you say holding, accountable.
Right. The person who is solely responsible for what they say is how art is moving this world. Mm. So the reason why art is such a fundamental threat to this American empire we have, because art is the only language that we have through comedy, through music, through literature, through film, through painting, through every medium we have in art, is one of the few things that challenges us to hold the people in power accountable. Anything that functions outside of the arts, the businesses, the law, the media, it functions to maintain those power structures by being passive, right? It goes, I don't want to be sued. And it's like, so Because you don't want to be sued, you're not going to tell it like it is. Well, I don't want to be sued. But every day we do that work as artists. We put ourselves out there. I'm just as vulnerable as being sued as the New York Times, but I've accepted with the stakes of my language, that's what I'm willing to do to create a language of accountability. That's one of the reasons why, like, when you read the media, understand that the media is not on our side. And when I say on our side, what I mean is if you are on the side of holding systems and people who create systems accountable, because systems don't create themselves, right? When we are talking about the people who uphold systems accountable, and you're on the side of accountability, a media publication is not functioning on its own. It's often functioning on the interests of the people who uphold those systems, because media is itself a tool of those systems. So it's imperative to read these things understanding that the people who create these media publications have their own objectives. And instead of assuming that the news is just for us to be informed, it's like, what is this media publication trying to inform us of? What does this media publication want us to see? What do the people who publish these things want us to see? And what can we hope, and what's the function of it? Because so many of us know the people who write for New York Times. Sometimes there's even less of us who know who edits the pieces at New York Times. But there's a minority of us who knows who actually is the publisher of the Times, of Fox, of Breitbart, of like the actual person who has the power. And what that means is to not be aligned with that true subject's power is to not really know that the head editor is an object of that publisher's power, the writer is an object of that publisher's power, the stories. It's objective behind objective behind objective. Mm-hmm. It's like the series of middle management before you reach the person who has the power.
Right.
And that's what this language has done to us. It's like we're so disconnected from the subject that we are all objects of this power. So the objective of the language that we read in the media is to create a passive thinking in our framework so that we don't have a language to hold anything accountable.
Mind blown. I am literally doing that thing with my hand where I like exploded out the side of my head for dramatic visual effect. Yes, for a podcast. But now you can see me doing it. To repeat Professor Israel's closing line, and I'm going to call him Professor Israel right now, quote, "The object of the language that we read in the media is to create a passive thinking in our framework so that we don't have a language to hold anything accountable." This got to me because we're in the fight for our lives as ever, and I'm feeling like we may be making some progress. And it turns out we're not just up against systemic racism in the form of policing policy, for example. We're up against and complicit in it by the use of language to subjugate and evade proper assignment of responsibility. Mind blown. For me, it also drove home this idea of moving the object into the subject's place, putting victims of racism or violence in the driver's seat. Women are killed by men? Well, that begs the question, what are these women doing to get themselves killed? George Floyd was killed by police? Well, what was he doing to make that happen? Must have been terrible. Or if we zoom out, Black people suffer from. Black people are vulnerable to. Black people earn less than. I mean, what is going on with these Black people? Just suffer less. Be less vulnerable. Earn more, Black people. We've all been guilty of weaponizing language in a way that shifts the responsibility onto oppressed people. We have used language deeply, structurally, to blame the victim. I want you to follow Yadon on Instagram, Y-A-H-D-O-N. Visit his website, yadonisrael.com, and you can enroll there in his Language Barriers lecture series. Khadija Hosseini is on Instagram as well. Jet Setter Problems is the handle, and her home series, or is it OM series, lives on IG as well, H-O-M-M-E, the series. Both of these are in the show notes, so you can tap there and type less. Meanwhile, stay vigilant. I know I can no longer read or listen to passive voice reporting anymore without constantly correcting the language. Just like my high school English teacher, I'm redlining all this abuse of language in the name of freedom. I hope you do too. We're Having a Moment is a production of iHeartRadio Podcast. Executive produced by Miles Gray, Nick Stumpf, and Baratunde Thurston. Produced by Joel Smith and Elizabeth Stewart. Edited by Justin Smith. Music by Allo Black. You can find my email newsletter and a lot more at baratunde.com. If you do the social things, find me on Instagram at Baratunde. And if you like text messaging, well, send me one. That's right, you can text me right now, 202-894-8844. Just put the text WHAM, wham, in the message.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like...
Whoa.
And...
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Your new home journey starts at Fisher Homes, where everything is red, white, and new. Explore exclusive summer savings and start your journey by selecting your ideal home site and your dream community. Choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans and bring your style to life at the Lifestyle Design Center. Are you looking for a quick move-in ready home instead? Fisher Homes has options for those too. Fill out a form to connect with a new home advisor at fisherhomes.com to get started today before the sun sets on summer savings.